And we are live. John Dickinson, Matt Steinmetz, NBA Finals, our Warriors Weekly podcast, and it's the preview edition for the Dubs and the Celtics, with Boston finishing off Miami in seven, hanging on for that win. The Warriors have known for a few days now that they are back in the finals for the sixth time in 8 years. This is the preview, Matt. So I guess, you know, where do you want to start? I got about 20 things, different directions listed we could go. I think maybe we start with Boston and not Miami. I think much more formidable opponent and problematic opponent for the Warriors, in my opinion, the Celtics are when in, you know, compared to what the Heat would have been.
Well, the one thing I was thinking about the playoffs in this day and age is, it feels like in recent years, you can play that injury game more and more and more. This team had this, lost this guy, that guy. This team was playing without him. But I'm starting to look at injuries as just part of the attrition that you need to overcome to win it all. And so I'm looking at these teams and I'm thinking, well, if Milwaukee is healthy, I still think they were the best team in the Eastern Conference. But without Middleton, you know, obviously they got beat. And I think all things considered, this Boston team is probably the best matchup against the Warriors, to my way of thinking, outside a healthy Milwaukee team. So from that standpoint, you know, I think we're pretty fortunate that right now, at least, both teams look to be going into this finals relatively healthy. And I know the Warriors have some doubt about Iguodala and Payton and Porter, but you know, like you said last week, their top six is intact, and Boston's pretty healthy too in terms of their top five or six. So, you know, I'm hoping it's going to be a good series.
Yeah, I think it has the potential to be a great series, and part of that is the fact that the Celtics have been as good as any team during the Warriors' run of dominance. And look, there's a lot of different iterations of the Celtics, and certainly this is a different version of the Warriors than years ago. But for whatever reason, the Celtics have had some success defending the Warriors to a greater extent than other teams have. And I think maybe a good starting point to dive into the matchup is the Celtics can put Marcus Smart on Steph Curry, and they still have Jaylen Brown, and they still have Jason Tatum, and they still have Derek White and others. Like, they have the ability to defend not only Steph, but put a pretty good defender on Klay Thompson and put another pretty good defender on Jordan Poole even. They've gotten into the habit of switching everything. We've seen how successful the Warriors have been at doing that in years past. But yeah, the Warriors' offense, I think, essentially versus the Celtics' defense is probably a good place to start in this thing.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, how much you can take out of the regular season game, particularly the last one where the Celtics pretty much handled the Warriors. Because, you know, the Warriors, they didn't have great regular seasons against Denver. They didn't have a great regular season against Memphis. Even Dallas, but they handled those teams in the playoffs. So now I'm a little bit skeptical of looking at a game or two in the regular season and thinking it may carry over. Though the last time these two teams played, I really do think Boston gave the Warriors something to think about, just because, especially in the first half, they just really kind of shut down the Warriors. And you know, Steph Curry got hurt, I think, late in the second quarter in that game, or midway through the second quarter. I know Jordan Poole had some big numbers, but most of those came after halftime. So I'm just trying to gauge whether the Boston Celtics can do that to the Warriors in the postseason. And obviously, you know, I'm looking at that box score now, and actually everybody played for the Warriors. Now, Draymond came off the bench, which is unusual, but the Warriors had Poole, Thompson, and Curry, at least at the start of that game. So, you know, I could see if, and, you know, I could see that Boston's probably got as much confidence against the Warriors as any team, really.
Yeah, and that was Draymond Green, I think, his second game back. If you remember, I think the Warriors played Washington on that Monday or 2 days before the Celtics game, and that was the first game where everybody was back, and they played just a handful of minutes together in that game. And then Curry goes down in the Boston game and winds up not playing again until game one of the playoffs. And yeah, you mentioned the Celtics, though, had the Warriors stymied in the first half, and they had Jordan Poole stymied in the first half as well. He did put up some numbers going into Curry's slot in the second half of that game. Robert Williams III was huge in that game. I know Anthony Slater of The Athletic dug up a couple of clips of him really coming over and helping on drives and blocking a couple of drives. And I think, you know, his mobility and where he's at physically, this was before he had the meniscus injury, which he's come back from, and he's kind of varying degrees of success for him. I think he's a big X factor because he does have the ability to come out and switch, but also really find his way toward a lot of shots in the paint. And I think the one thing we've found where the Warriors have had success in the playoffs, Steiny, has been where teams have tried to get him off the three-point line. The Warriors have really made teams pay in the paint, you know, getting to the basket, even getting to the free throw line. And if Robert Williams is unable to patrol the paint, I think it becomes a similar task for the Warriors against this Celtics team, and maybe a little bit of an easier task to get to the basket against this Celtics team.
Well, I feel like the guy who's key is Looney. And whether we're talking about offense or defense, I felt like Looney against Memphis wasn't as successful, at least scoring, because they are very athletic. Then I thought against Dallas, Looney was he just knew that he could get shots over guys and by guys and through guys. And so I got to see how that plays out. Looney during the regular season, there's a lot of times where he just doesn't look great finishing around the basket. He either doesn't finish or he'll miss and he'll tap the one and he'll get it back. But for the most part, he's not a great finisher against length. So that's the one thing I got to see against Boston is whether or not Looney can provide, you know, a little bit of an outlier of offense. And then, of course, if the Warriors continue to win these rebounding battles, they're really hard to beat. And, you know, I remember talking about this 4 or 5 years ago, but it happened multiple times in multiple games against Dallas where you get an offensive rebound off a three, and it basically is the best offense you can run if you're the Warriors. Because if you defend, even if you don't defend the Warriors great, their shot, the three-point shot that they're going to get off an offensive rebound is always better than the three-point shot they get off their offense against a half-court defense that's set. It never fails. And the reason it never fails is because they'll always have an advantage, and the players, their players will always be out of position, and the Warriors always find that open three-point shooter. And boy, do those just demoralize you.
Yeah, there's just no way to defend it. I mean, the Warriors you can't defend it. You're just not ready for it. And
no.
Just that one misstep or that one split second of timing makes all the difference in the world in the Warriors' favor. Our Warriors Weekly Podcast, NBA Finals Preview Edition. We are live on the 95.7 The Game Twitter account. Also recording this for later. We'll get it posted right around noon as Steiny will hook up with Guru, and their show will begin here on 95.7 The Game. One area where the Warriors do have an advantage, at least going in, there's two big ones that stand out. The rest advantage for the Warriors, and I guess my question for you would be, how long do the Warriors have the rest advantage? Is it just for the first couple games of the series because they're the older team? Is it throughout the entirety of the series because the Celtics are coming off of a pair of Game 7 wins and really just two grinder series against not only Miami but Milwaukee before that? And then the experience advantage, which isn't nothing. This Celtics team has got a lot of playoff experience and they've taken some tough losses over the years, but no NBA finals experience. I mean, the Warriors just exponentially with their big three and Iguodala, who may not be playing a lot, and Kevon Looney compared to the Celtics team that literally has none.
Right.
None.
I'm not sure how to look at that, to tell you the truth, because let's face it, the Warriors are going to have a experience advantage over everybody they play at this point. No, every team. That's what happens when you go to the finals six times. By the same token, I do give the Celtics something for, you know, knocking on the door year after year, quite frankly, and winning a couple series, you know, one year and one another. And, you know, they've been in the mix. But this is exactly the way I kind of felt about Dallas. But I think Boston is more athletic. The rest, believe it or not, I don't think the rest is going to be the big deal in this series, because I even think three games for Boston might be plenty, since, you know, coming off of game seven, the experience, you got to let that play out a little bit. But yes, the Warriors, one of the things that I think I give the Warriors a little edge in is the fact that they, you know, they've played these games before, so many of them, and all it takes is one game and the series, I don't want to say is over, but the series, all of us, you know, if the Boston Celtics blow a lead,
yeah,
in any game in this series,
and the
Warriors win it, to me, then it becomes too hard to beat the Warriors, because I look at it as, well, now you got to beat them five times, and I don't think you can do that with a team that good.
All right, well, I'm going to move to a different part of my list, because you touched on something that had been jotted down, and that is the Celtics' propensity to blow some leads in the playoffs. And I'm having the thought during game seven, as we're all watching, and they've got that game comfortably in hand. You knew Miami was going to make a run, but I was watching that game seven and the Celtics able to hang on, and Jimmy Butler takes the three and misses it. And all I could think about was, if the Celtics do this against the Warriors are going to win, period. Like, they will win. And whether the, you know, somebody on the Warriors hits the three, or they drive and they get an and one, or whatever, the game goes to overtime, whatever. And we saw the Celtics lose a lead in the Milwaukee series. Now, they deserve credit. They've been able to overcome this. They were able to hang on and win on Monday night. But I do think the Celtics have had a way they've had to play offensively. And I think this also relates to the Celtics offense, which is a key question for them. I sort of look at it as, hey, top two defensive teams, which offense is more apt to still be effective or more effective going up against a top flight defense? And I tend to lean Warriors in that, just based on the fact that there are games where you can't keep them down, even if you defend them well. You know, maybe it's one or two in a series. That's where it flips. But the leads are another thing where, and we've seen this against Dallas, we saw this against Memphis, even a small dry spell has been enough for the Warriors to go on a run that wins them a game. And the Warriors have been the opposite of the Celtics. They've stolen games really in every series. So I think when you look at it, the Celtics have sat on some leads. The Warriors are always going to keep coming and are maybe a shot or two away from feeling like they got major action. Just kind of your thoughts on all of that.
Yeah, the Celtics game against Miami was a little bit troubling for two reasons. One, the game seven I'm talking about. One is, I really thought they could bog down.
When they also sat on it, like they just,
well, they didn't though. Is Marcus Smart took two or three threes with 10 or 11 on the shot clock with under 2 minutes left. And it's like, you know, you got to use those 10 seconds in a game like this. Now, I know what he was thinking, one make and it's over, but you miss two of those and now you give up basically a full possession of time. Well, now you're really asking for trouble. But even their offense, it just looked like there's not a lot of creativity with it. You know, they're just putting the ball in Tatum's hands and
driving kick.
Exactly. And I just don't know if that can get it done against the Warriors. You're going to have to really make some shots. And I just look at their personnel and it's like, you know, Marcus Smart, I'll bet she shoots 35% from three in the series.
One great game and five games.
Yeah. Now, he obviously does a lot of other things. And then the other guy, I think, Jaylen Brown's going to have to show me something too. I just have a feeling, you know, he's really good and he's really athletic, but he loves getting to that right hand. And I wonder if the Warriors can't just do something to just click him down a little bit. And that's all it's going to take. You know, if Jaylen Brown comes out of this, oh, Jaylen Brown only averaged 19, but on 42% shooting, well, you're done. You're not going to win that way. So the diversity of the offenses is what where I give the Warriors an advantage for sure.
Yeah, and I'd almost say, and we talked about this in the lead up to the Dallas series, which team knows better what they want to do late in games. I think you could make the case the Warriors are that answer in this series, at least going into it, even though they may be the team. Like, they're going to run their stuff, but at least they're used to running their stuff in those situations, where the Celtics, I think, make themselves more guardable, because there's something to be said for, I feel, the ball movement and player movement of the Warriors being more effective against this Celtics style of defense.
Well, I actually think the Celtics could defend the Warriors better than the Warriors defend the Celtics, because the Warriors are better offensively. It may not look that way. You know what I mean? Like,
they'll just make shots even when they're well defended at a higher rate.
Right. I think the Celtics are going to have to play better defense than the Warriors, because the Warriors offense is tougher to defend than. And I almost think at times, like, the, you know, if the Warriors are playing great defense, I think the Celtics are in trouble. But I also think there's situations where the Warriors don't necessarily have to be great defensively, and they'll walk, you know, they'll stumble into possessions where Boston can't score, or Boston kind of kicks. Exactly. Bad shot here, bad shot there. Now, one thing I was surprised to look at, JD, I'm looking at the last game they played, the 110-88 game, where the Warriors just handled them. Now, I would have thought the Warriors had a ton of turnovers in that game, but they didn't. They only had 8 turnovers in that game against the Celtics. So they got beat by 20, and they didn't turn the ball over. I think Boston's going to have to turn the Warriors over. They're going to have to really – they're going to have to make the perimeter guys so much more uncomfortable than they have been in the postseason. I'm talking about the Warriors perimeter guys.
Well, and both teams have shown a propensity, not in that game specifically, but both teams can turn it over a little bit. And mm-hmm. I think that's something to watch, right? Because the Warriors, when they're not playing well, a lot of the time it is the turnovers. The Grizzlies really were able to accentuate that. I don't know that the Celtics have the size in terms of big man size that the Grizzlies do. In fact, I don't think they do, but they do have the guard and wing size. And again, I come back to Marcus Smart's going to be on Steph, let's say, and Jaylen Brown's an excellent defender, and he's going to be on somebody, Wiggins. You're going to put somebody else on Clay. Derek White's a really good defender. We haven't even talked about Grant Williams, who defends multiple different positions on the floor. So they've got, I think, more in the bag than any other team in terms of those defenders.
They do. They've got players, but I still think the reason that the Boston Celtics might have a chance in this series is what I always seem to come back to when you kind of the only way you can beat the Warriors. And that is, can Marcus Smart win his matchup against Steph Curry? That doesn't mean he outscores him. That means he turns Curry into a volume guy. Maybe at the end of the series, it's a 7-game series, and we're like, wow, Curry had 30 turnovers in this series. Something like that. Then you got, you know, Brown on Klay Thompson. You know, can he make Klay look like he's missed half a year and is coming back from 2 injuries? Does Klay look a hair slow, or, you know, hair not there? Tatum on Wiggins. Well, you know what I mean? Like, they have the personnel, and now Poole is going to be guarded by somebody, and it might not necessarily be one of those 3 guys. It might be a Grant Williams or somebody like that, but that's the recipe, I think, to beat the Warriors. It's not, okay, we're going to blitz Curry, and then you're playing 3-on-4.
And I don't think they're going to do that.
No, I don't either. I don't either.
That's not really their, that's not their style. I mean, right. Maybe you do it a little bit just to change it up,
right,
for a surprise factor, but
right.
I don't, they're equipped enough to not have to do it, Steiny, which I do think, to your point, gives them a better chance than maybe a lot of teams would.
And here's the other thing that I'm starting to think about, because we've seen it all year. You know, Boston can be, Boston has the propensity to bog down offensively. You know, what happens if the Warriors throw up a zone, you know, for 5-10 minutes a game? Like, the one thing that I feel like has been a theme all year is when the Warriors use their zone or whatever it is they're going to use, a box in one, a 3-2, you know, they get benefit out of it, whether it's for one possession or six possessions. When they zone up, the other team just doesn't get it right away. You know what I mean? And then, you know, the shot clock gets down to six and somebody's like, I'll just take a three, and it's not a great three, and they miss it. And it just, for some reason, that zone defense the Warriors use coaxes the opposition into mediocre shots. And I think part of it's because they're not really ready. And two is, I'm not sure anybody really knows how to go about attacking it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think that's also really well said. John Dickinson, Matt Steinmetz, our Warriors weekly podcast, our NBA Finals preview edition. Couple other things jotted down here for the final 10 minutes or so. Boston road tested, 7-2 on the road, 5-4 at home. Does that mean anything to you? I mean, the Warriors are 9-0 at home, and Boston comes in 7-2 on the road, and it's a really good 7-2 on the road. Game 7 win on the road, a Game 6 facing elimination after you basically tricked the Game 5 against the defending champions. I mean, it's a pretty impressive 7-2, and it really sets the table for, I think, the first two games in Chase Center. Can the Celtics get one?
Exactly.
Part of the history of this head-to-head series, for whatever reason, and it played out in this last regular season series, the road team wins a lot in the right. head-to-head between these two. The Warriors have won in Boston a lot over the years, some big games, some good games, and the Celtics have won at Oracle and Chase.
Yeah, these two teams have had some good games. And maybe they're not so good if you're a Warrior fan, because, you know, the Celtics have done well against the Warriors in the regular season. I never know what to make of that. My feeling is, I think Boston will come in and get a game on the road. I don't know which one, but I don't know that they're going to be able to get two. And so that means you can't lose at home in Boston. And so you start looking at the series like that, and you do realize, you know, Boston's got its work cut out for them. And I think you're absolutely right. We've seen this too many times with the Warriors. You cannot get down 2-0. You cannot. It's too hard. They're too good, and chances are they're going to be able to steal game 3 or 4, and then it's over. So, to me, the Boston Celtics, they've got to find a way to get back to Boston 1-1 and start setting the table that, hey, you know what? This is going to be a long series, because, you know, I think that's something that could work against the Warriors, to tell you the truth. Boston comes in, they get 1 out of 2, and it's starting to see like, oh boy, this, you know, they've got some physicality, they got some length.
Going to be a long series.
Exactly. Like, the Warriors aren't going to be able to just 3-point shoot their way to a 5-game win in the NBA Finals. And then you start setting it up for the Warriors, like, man, they're going to have to grind and grind and grind. But Boston's got to set that tone early.
No, I think you're right, and I think if it's 1-1 going to Boston, I think in all likelihood it's probably 2-2 coming back to San Francisco
right.
at that point, going to a game 5, and then you see where it shakes out from there. A big part of the storyline for the Warriors is who's coming back or who might be coming back. The report's optimistic on Gary Payton II and also Otto Porter Jr. We'll see about Iguodala. I always like to run through the playables in a series. I think the Celtics, and you correct me if I got 6.5. I sound like Eric Musselman when I say that. I got 6.5, 7 playables. Robert Williams is the guy who I give the half to just because he hadn't been able to play all the time.
Well, he's got to be a full, even though I get what you're saying.
And I think that's where, you know, a couple of weeks ago we talked and I said, you know, if the Warriors were playing the Celtics right now, I might pick the Celtics. And I think at that point it was maybe Celtics in seven. And I think I was saying this to Whitey yesterday. We did a show together. I think I went from Celtics in seven over the last 2 weeks to Warriors in seven. And now I'm almost leaning Warriors in six. But we'll see. But part of that is the Celtics late game issues. Part of that is Robert Williams III maybe not being fully healthy. I thought if the Celtics had to be fully healthy. But as far as the playables go, here's what I got. I've got Robert Williams, Horford, Tatum, Brown, Smart, obviously, and then Grant Williams and Derek White. And then for the Warriors, I've got six with Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Green, Looney, and then obviously Jordan Poole, Porter and Payton, TBD. Porter and Payton, if they're healthy and available, that gives the Warriors eight. So the Warriors would have, I think, a slight advantage just in overall playables. The other part of this too, Steiny, is can Robert Williams III and Al Horford play together? Can they start together against the Warriors? And, you know, the other thing, I just looking at their rotation is, you know, could Derek White, he's up and down offensively. Right. And I think the Warriors are really going to look to, Derek White, Marcus Smart, take all the perimeter jumpers you want.
Right. No, I think you're right there. And the other thing is, so we got game one Thursday, game two Sunday.
Yeah.
Game three
Wednesday. So it's 2 days.
And then where's
off.
Game four?
Game four is Friday. So that's the only time there's one day is between three and four. All the other times there's 2 days.
Yeah. So, I mean, that tells me that Boston's probably going to be tight with their rotation, almost even tighter. But, you know, Williams and Horford better be able to play together, especially if the Warriors are going to start Looney and Draymond. I mean, that's the other thing.
Do you think they'll start that way? They'll stick with what's been rolling with them? Because Horford's
the Warriors?
The Celtics.
I think they started Williams and Horford together 2 days ago, right?
Yes, and they have been when both have been healthy enough.
I think you have to. And that's another thing. I mean, I think that, you know, can Horford and Williams outplay Looney and Green? Maybe, but like they're going to have to. You know, they're going to have to. Williams and Horford are going to have to, can they dominate the glass? Maybe. But what we've seen with the Warriors is, you know, they rebound with quickness and length, and they're beating teams to balls. Now, maybe they can't do that against Boston with Tatum, Brown, and Smart. But, I think you can absolutely – you're going to have to play those two guys together, I think. What are you going to do, bring Tyson?
Well, no, I'm saying maybe you'd start Grant Williams.
Sure.
And then you put, you know, one of those guys, either Robert Williams, if he's not healthy enough, or you know, Horford or Robert Williams III would come off the bench, and you'd be playing the same seven. You'd just be playing those. I think those seven, that's it. You'd be playing those seven, and it would just be you'd play them in a different rotation to maybe try and maximize the most you get out of Robert Williams.
Yeah, so you don't think Pritchard is going to play at this or can help at all?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, they may need his offense, but at the expense of what? He better be making shots, otherwise he's going to be a quick minus eight. I mean, he's going to be the John Conchar of this series.
Boy, was he terrible quietly. I mean, he was absolutely
terrible.
Well,
then he wasn't
terrible.
Playing anymore, so everybody forgot. I think everybody forgot how terrible he was because he wasn't playing. It was like he got 5 minutes in two games, minus 20 combined, and then never played again.
Right. Right. The other thing is, to me, it's they're both they're, you know, two very good defensive teams. But to me, Boston's got to be like noticeably better defensively than the Warriors. They've got to look better defensively than the Warriors. And, you know, you can get the Warriors going sideways here and there, but it's tough to get them going sideways consistently over the course of a series. So anytime that they are able to kind of lock down the Warriors for a quarter and a half, they're going to have to win those games.
Final thought here, X factors for both teams. I think Wiggins is an X factor in a big way for the Warriors. I kind of went back and forth Wiggins pool. I don't want to steal two, so I'll talk about Wiggins. I think he's an X factor in a major way for the Warriors, just in that, how are the Warriors going to get enough scoring? To me, he's the one player that might get left with a lesser defender on him and the ball in his hands, because there's so much attention being paid to Steph and to Klay, and even to Jordan Poole when Jordan Poole's on the floor. I think there's a window for Wiggins to be able to attack and almost maybe have to attack in some of these games. The Warriors have gotten just what they need from Wiggins and Poole on the nights where maybe Steph and Klay aren't hot to be able to win. I think he's an X factor. I also think he's an X factor because he's going to be defending Tatum and Brown a lot as well, and to what level he does. So I think Wiggins, like, Curry's going to be Curry and Klay's going to be Klay and Draymond's going to be Draymond and all of that. I think Wiggins is kind of the X factor for me for them. Like, give me a Celtic X factor if you want as well. I might say Grant Williams is my Celtic X factor, almost for a similar reason. Like, when he hits three-pointers, they're pretty tough, and then he can kind of defend everybody.
Yeah, he's an interesting player. I mean, I would think Wiggins too. You know, and it's the kind of thing where, man, if Wiggins can defend Tatum, okay. And if you look at Doncic's numbers against the Warriors, they were great. Doncic had big numbers against the Warriors, but conventional wisdom is, you know what? Wiggins did a nice job on him.
Yeah.
Well, if Wiggins can do a nice job on Tatum and then get you 17 and 10 like he's been getting, again, that might not be outplaying Tatum, but it kind of is, because Tatum is the best player on the Boston Celtics. So Wiggins, to me, I see what you mean. Wiggins is a guy who could, you know, if he finds himself matched up on the perimeter with Horford or with Williams, you know, I got to believe
it sometimes.
Yeah. And I got to believe the Warriors are like, you got to be aggressive, just like you were when we found Doncic on you.
All right, Steiny, that's good. I was going to ask you about Steph Curry and the MVP. What does the finals MVP mean to Steph Curry? I'll give you 30 seconds and then we'll wrap it. Anything, well, nothing, everything.
It's important. Probably, you know, I think his legacy's cemented. And I think if they lose or he doesn't get the MVP, it's easy ammunition for the one side. If he gets it, it's easy ammunition for the second or the other side. But my question is, it's tough for me to imagine the Warriors winning the NBA Finals this year with this team and Curry not being the MVP. It's hard for me to imagine that, because I don't, you know, Klay hasn't shown that he can be consistent over six or seven games. I think Poole's a little up and down. As good as Wiggins has been, you can't tell me he's more valuable than Curry at the end of the day. You know, if the Warriors win it all and Curry clearly is not the MVP, well, then I want to see how it happens. You know what I mean?
It'd be a pretty incredible story, I think, at that point, no doubt. So great stuff, Steiny. We'll end it on that note. We're going to be doing this hopefully after each game, the next day following each game in this series. So for Matt Steinmetz, I'm John Dickinson. We appreciate you watching and listening. Another Warriors Weekly podcast in the books.